All right, we're getting at the bottom of Zayin Amud Bet by the Mishnah. The Mishnah is discussing the pasuk that is famous in the issue of galut, which is the pasuk in Dvarim Yutet, pasuk Hey, Vashay Avot Reu Bayar Lachtov Etzim, comes into the forest, he's cutting, chopping trees, V'nitchaya Do Bagarzen Lichot Ha'etz, he has the handle of the axe in his hand to go cut the wood. And something slipped out, and then his friend was hit and killed by that. He runs away to one of the cities of refuge and takes refuge there. So the Mishnah here discusses what exactly happened in this situation. Nishmat ha-barzel mikato, which is actually what seemingly is the pashtut of pasuk, is that the axe, the metal of the axe, slipped off the handle, barag, and that killed him. Rabbi Omer, enu golet. That's not the case of galut, that's not what the pasuk is speaking about. Bechamim omrim golet. That is the classic case of galut. It's a case where when the person's swinging the axe, the head of the axe goes flying off the handle and hits him. Mina eitz hamitbakea. If a splinter goes flying off of the wood that he is splitting, Rabbi Omer Golet. That is the case that's in the Torah. Chamim Omrim, Eno Golet. Chamim say that's not a case that's brought by the Torah. So the question is, what flew and hit the other individual? According to the Chachamim, it's the head of the axe went flying off and that's what killed the other person. Whereas for Rabbi, it's not that the axe did anything, but it was the splitting of the wood that shot a splinter out or a piece of wood out that hit the other individual. Although the Rabbeinu Chananel does bring an alternative view, which is actually the view that the Rambam takes, Kagon Shinitza Bikat Mina Eitz Valchave Argad, as Rashi says, that the axe hit the wood and a piece of the wood or a chunk of the wood went flying off and killed the person. Oh, Shinishmat Barzel, that the head of the axe went flying off. Klomar, Mikoach HaKato Be'etz Libak O Nishmat Valach Varag. Unlike the Chachamim who believe that it was the actual metal flying off the handle, what Rabbi is saying according to the Rabbeinu Chananel is that the impact of the hit of the axe on the wood caused the head of the axe to go flying off the handle because of that impact. It wasn't because of its looseness on the handle, but rather the impact on the wood that sent it flying. So that's another alternative as to what Rabbi thinks is the prototypical case of galut. Tanya, Amar Lehem Rabbi the Chachamim, V'chi Nemar V'Nashal HaBarzel Me'etzo, doesn't say that the axe or the metal of the axe slipped off the wood. Halolo Nemar Elep Min HaEitz, from the eitz. So what Rabbi points out is that even if you read the Pasuk Kepashtuto, which is V'Nashal HaBarzel Min HaEitz, right, it doesn't say that it went mi-eitzo, its own handle. It says min ha-eitz, which seems to be generically from some word or from the tree. For od ne'amar, eitz tamato, ne'amar eitz tamalo. Mentions eitz here, and mentions eitz before. Ma-eitz amur lamala min ha-eitz. Just like the eitz that was mentioned up above was from the eitz itself, which is that when he went into the yar, he went lichrot ha-eitz. He went to cut wood. So then when it uses the term eitz, v'nashal barzel min ha-eitz, seems like it's referencing back to the eitz it just mentioned four words ago, which is the tree. So then, ma eitz amur lamala min ha-eitz ha-mitbakea, just like there it's speaking about the wood he's splitting, av eitz amur lamata min ha-eitz ha-mitbakea, so too the eitz that is mentioned after nashal barzel is from the wood that he is splitting. So Rabbi gives two reasons for why he believes that he's right. The first of which is, it says, min ha-eitz, and doesn't say mi eitzo, which is, it sounds like from generically from the wood and not from the handle of the axe. And number two is, he says the word eitz was used all of four words beforehand, and there it meant the tree was cutting or the wood he was splitting. So the eitz afterwards should mean the same thing. Otherwise you need to change the definition of the word eitz and use something like eitzo, which would indicate that it is the wood of the handle from the axe. So the Rav's Rabbi's two positions. Amar Rabbi Chiya Barashi Amrav, Ushne Mikra Echad Darshu. They both darsh in the same pasuk, Minashal HaBarzel Mina Eitz, which obviously is the pasuk in question over here. Rabbi Savar Yesh Eim LeMesoret. Rabbi believes that there is an aim to the Mesora, and the Mesora is that we spell it in a way that you would read, V'Nishal HaBarzel Mina Eitz. It's Rabbanan Savar Yesh Eim LeMikra, the way that you read it, which is V'Nashal Karinan. So the difference would be, as Rashi writes over here, some sort of sound or vowelization that comes after v'nashal, So between the nun and the shin, you would make an ah sound. So that ah has to be created either by an aleph or a hey. Ulufiya misoret, according to the Soret, it would be nishel. Shehishil habarzel minaitz, that it caused something else to split away. So the way that Rabbi learns it is, you have to look at the aim la misoret, the way that it's spelled in the Torah. The Torah is spelled without an aleph or a hey between the nun and the shin. So that would indicate that it's not pronounced v'nashal, but rather v'nishel, or v'nishal. It caused something else to split. The axe itself caused something else to go flying or split off. And that's what it is, to fly off or to slip off. It's an active form of nishal causing something else to happen. Absent an aleph or a hey, he's saying that the pronunciation would be with the chirik, because you don't have the aleph or hey to indicate that it should be an ah sound. That's the way that Rabbi reads it. That's the aim lemisoret, the way it's spelled. Whereas the Chachamim read it aim lemikra, the way that we read it. We have the vowelization in misora that the word should be read as bin nashal. So he says the machloket here is whether you subscribe to aim lemisoret or you subscribe to aim lemikra. If you take, and again, we've looked at this before, there are machlokot in the Tanaim about how to read something with its aim lemisoret, aim lemikra, which takes precedence in these cases. Some Tanaim even believe that you're both aim lemisoret, aim lemikra. But usually it's when the problem is that it soter achadat esheni. You can't read it both ways. And that's here the case, that if you read it one way, you have a very different outcome than if you read it the other way. Which is, how removed is the item that killed this person from you? In the situation where you believe that it's the head of the axe going off the handle of the axe, that means you're actually holding the object in your hand, and then the head of the axe goes flying off. So there is almost direct connection between the head of the axe going flying off and your hand. The other hand, for Robbie's explanation, you have the axe still in your hand and then the wood. That causes something to splinter and then shoot off. More indirect, or it's a derivative action of what you're doing. So you can't say that it means both because they are different. And the Chachamim might say in the case of Rabbi that that's already considered to be too far removed for you to be responsible. That's already what they call koach kocho. It's a derivative of your koach. Whereas for Rabbi, that is still considered to be your koach when you hit it and it shoots off. But then he'll have to explain what's koach kocho, which will ask itself. But what you see here is that you can't have both aim lemisoret and aim lemikra, so you have to pick one. So now what we're suggesting is that Rabbi follows aim lemisoret, and the Chachamim are following aim lemikra. Rabbi yesh aim lemitzoret svirle? Wait a minute, does Rabbi really think there's aim lemisoret? V'amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Yosef, v'amar Rabbi Yochanan? Rabbi, for Rabbi Yehuda ben Ruetz, u'beit Shammai, v'Rabbi Shimon, v'Rabbi Kiva, hulu svirle yesh aim lemikra. They all hold of aim lemikra. So if they subscribe to aim lemikra, how can you claim here that Rabbi says aim lemisoret? Even though, as the Gdalei Tosafot pointed out in the beginning of Sanhedrin, we find Tanaim that sometimes say Eim LeMisoret, sometimes say Eim LeMikra. The Tosafot over there discusses the fact that just because you say it in one place doesn't necessarily mean you say it in other places, because it might be the Pasuk is forcing you to say something, or the context is forcing you to say something. So it's not a given just because you say it in one place, it has to be the other way. But here the Gemara takes it for granted that Rabbi would subscribe to Eim LeMikra. So why is Rav Yechiya Barashi suggesting in the name of Rav that Rabbi's position derives from this idea of Eim LeMisoret when Rabbi does subscribe to Eim LeMikra? It says, Hainu Dekamar Lehu Ba'od. That's why Rabbi says two reasons to them. He says, not only this, but Ba'od, and also this. Which is, I'm telling you that I hold of Eim LeMikra. But if you hold of Eim LeMisoret, then you'd have a problem because the word should be read as v'nishal instead of v'nashal. Now, if you also, like me, read it with aim lemikra, which means that it's v'nashal, I have another problem here, which is the word eitz appears in both situations, and therefore it would be more likely that the word eitz here means the wood itself and not the handle of the axe. So the Ramban rejects Rashi's explanation over here for three reasons. First of all, we don't find the word nashal ever spelt with an aleph or a hey between the nun and the shin. So he doesn't know where Rashi got that from. Number two is, it's more likely that the word is v'nashal than it is v'nishel. And if you left us with an opportunity to decide what the word is, you definitely would have picked v'nashal and not v'nishel. And lastly, the reason that Rabbi states in the Braita why he disagrees with the Chachamim is because the Pasuk says, Nashala Barzel min ha'etz, and not min etzot. So what does that have to do with Eim le'misoret versus Eim le'mikra? And therefore the Ramban says that actually the machloket here between Rabbi and the Chachamim is about the word v'nashal. And everybody agrees that there's Eim le'misoret. And the question is, what is the meaning of the word v'nashal in this context? The word nashal is used in different psukim, the one that the Balei Tosafot quote, as well as the Ramban, is v'nashal goyim rabim mipanecha, that Hashem will cause to slip away or move away from you many nations. Over there, the word nashal is used as a standalone verb, and the verb means that you will cause, through whatever action it is, something to move. And similarly over here, the word v'nashal would be used in a similar term, which is v'nashal ha-barzel ha-eitz, which is that the barzel causes something else to slip, and it's an independent verb. And what the Eim le'misoret means over here is that we look at the way it's used in the other psukim, and the more likely explanation of the word v'nashal over here is that it's caused something to slip off, and not that it was a verb that was joined with another item, saying that that was the item that slipped off. And Rabbi is convinced of that because it doesn't say eitzo, but rather says eitz in the pasuk. Chachamim, on the other hand, say that if you read the simple reading of the pasuk, v'nashal habarzel, v'nashar habarzel min ha'eitz, it makes it sound like literally that the metal went flying off, and it means v'nashal habarzel, not that something flew off because of the barzel, but rather that the barzel itself, v'nashal habarzel, it's a joint, a verb that includes the object which went flying, and that is v'nashal habarzel, and that the metal itself went flying. And so that's the Eim le'mikra. That's the way that you read the pasuk. If you had no other guidance from the outside, despite the difficulty of the word eitz versus eitzo, you would have read it simply as v'nashal habarzel. On the other hand, Rabbi believes Eim le'misoret, that we look for other precedents or other paradigms in which we see the word nashal meaning something else, and that governs the way that we read it here. Now, even though, and the Balei Tosafot asks the same question, Rabbi says in other places that Rabbi favors Eim le'mikra, over here, he goes against that grain, or the way that the Ramban says it, he could have said both Eim le'mikra and Eim le'misoret. But like the Balei Tosafot say here, the Ramban says here in the Balei Tosafot we discussed back in the beginning of Sanhedrin, also suggests that when and there is a problem in the pasuk, that can change the way that you look at the definition of the word. And over here, Rabbi indicates there's a problem in the pasuk, which is min ha'eitz and not min eitzo. And that actually pushes him to say Eim le'misoret here, unlike he would say in other places, Eim le'mikra. For that reason, the Ramban says he didn't say both Eim le'misoret and Eim le'mikra. For the Balei Tosafot, that's why he said Eim le'misoret and not Eim le'mikra. The Chachamim note that if you were right about Eitzo, the Ramban says that you should have said Yashal Brazel ha'eitz, not Min ha'eitz. And so therefore there's a mitigating side to it not saying Eitzo, which is Min ha'eitz. And so they're arguing about which is the simpler way to read the Pasuk, given the difficulty of the wording. And then the additional statement of Va'od then comes to do the same thing. Even if you don't think that Eitzo is sufficient reason to do that, I have a Gzeira Shava of sorts that tells me eitz, that would indicate that the eitz later on in the Pasuk is similar to the eitz in the beginning of the Pasuk, and it's not the handle of the axe. And in that way, it also pushes me to interpret the Pasuk based on the Misoret and not on the Mikra. And that's what presses Rabbi to say that the word is V'nishel and not V'nashal, even though that wouldn't have been the simplest way to read the Pasuk. Amar Papa, man deshade pisa de dikla. Someone throws a clod of earth at a palm tree. Va'atar tamre, and it hits the dates on the tree, and they release from the tree. Va'azul tamre, and they go flying down the kotel, and they kill somebody. Banal machloket, Rabbi Rabbanan. This is the machloket, the Rabbi and the Rabbanan. So Gemara says, pshita. Why would you have thought otherwise? This is exactly what they describe. For Rabbi, this is your classic case of galut. You threw something, or you released something, it hits another item, and that item then kills the person. Just like when you took the axe, swung the axe, hit the wood, and then a chip went flying off. Over here, you threw a clod of earth, it hit the tamarim dropped and hit someone. That's the exact same case for them. So for Rabbi, you'd go into galut. For the chachamim, you would not go into galut. It says, that is more like a derivative of the individual's action, and therefore, it would not classified as in your action, and therefore you wouldn't go into galut. Kamash Malan, that's not what Rabbi says. Now, whenever you have a question like this, it could be for two reasons. It could be that Rabbi doesn't think this is koach kocho, but rather he thinks it's kocho. Or it's because Rabbi believes koach kocho is chayav. You can read it one of two ways, except the Gemara right now tells you. Ella, koach kocho the Rabbi, hecha mishkachala. So it's clear that Rabbi doesn't think koach kocho is chayav. He thinks that that's still called koach. So then what is koach kocho according to Rabbi? Kagon, the shoda pisa. So he throws a cart of earth. Umachia the garmo. It hits the stem that is holding the dates. Ve'azil garmo umachia the kavaso. And then the stem or the leaf that is there by the dates hits the dates themselves. And then Vatar Tamri, and then it shakes the dates off. Vazil Tamri Vikatli, and then they dropped and killed someone. So that's Koach Kocho for Rabbi. So according to Rabbi, any first action that you take that has a direct result in action, that's not called Koach Kocho. That's still called your Koach. So like the case of the axe where you're swinging the axe, that's your Koach. And then a chip goes flying off. We don't classify that as koach kocho. We consider that to be your direct koach. So too over here, when he throws the clod of earth and it hits the dates and they fall, we still consider that to be your koach. Although, you could have differentiated, and that's what the Gemara speculated, that maybe these cases are different. In the case of the axe, he never releases the axe from his hand. So when he hits the wood and then the splinter goes off, you could claim that that is really just kocho because it was the axe itself that was still within his grasp that shot the wood off. When he releases the clod of earth, he's already left his koach and put it full force in there. And then when it hits something else, that becomes koach kocho. But the Gemara says is that's not the case. Rabbi does not differentiate that way. And they're both considered to be kocho. And therefore, your chayav in both of those cases, galut. The case where you won't be is if there's another derivative in between, which is he hits the stem hits the dates, and then the dates release. Okay, next Mishnah. Hazarek Evan Rishut Rabim. Someone throws a rock, a stone, into the middle of the public thoroughfare, Baharag, and kills someone. Harizek Goleh. That person goes into Galut. We'll have to discuss in the Gemara why that is. That seems a little bit ludicrous that is a case of Shogeg. That seems much more like Pshia in that situation. Lazar ben Yaakov Omer, if once he's released the stone, and there's a trajectory to the stone, Hosi Hala et Rosho, the other person walked into the trajectory of the stone, Bikibla, and therefore he got hit. It's not because the stone hit him, it's because he basically hit the stone. Harizeh Patur, that person is Patur from Galut. Again, the Gemara will discuss why that is from the Psukim that he learns, that it has to be that the trajectory that you send the item on is what kills in order to go to Galut, not that someone else brings themselves into the trajectory of the item. Zarakat Devin the Chatzero Barag. He throws a stone into his own yard and he kills. Im Yesh Rishut Nizak Likanesham. If the victim over here had permission to be in your Chatzer, Golet, then you're going to Galut. Because in that case, he had rights to be there and you should have taken more precaution knowing that someone has a right to come into your yard. Imlav, if he had no right to be there, then ain't no golev. You didn't have to take any precaution. You didn't expect anybody to be there. He walked in. He's trespassed. That's his taking his life into his own hands. Shenemar. So here the pasuk is, Vasher Yavoet Re'ehu Bayar. That when he came to his friend in the forest, Mahayar Rishut L'Nizakul Mazik, the Kanesham, like we saw already, just like the forest is a place where both parties have permission to be there, Avko Rishut L'Nizakul Mazik, the Kanesham. The only instance where there's galut is where both parties have permission to be there. Excluded from that is your own property where the victim didn't have a right to be, trespassed to be there, and therefore you can't be responsible. We can't say to you, take more precaution. We can say you take more precaution when you should have anticipated it. Over here, there's no reason for you to anticipate a trespasser, and therefore we can't claim you should have taken more precaution. Abajolomer, machatavate tzim rishut. He learns out from that pasuk, just like chopping of wood is a secular item of choice, meaning that you don't have to engage in it, you can choose to engage in it. Abko Rishut, so too, any case where it's an optional engagement, that's where you get put into galut. Yatsa, excluded from that are instances of a mitzvah where you won't go into galut, which are Av HaMaked Bino, a father that hits his child to put him on the Derech HaYashar, Harava Rode Talmido, a Rebbe who is directing the student through physical interaction to do the right thing or make the right choices. Ushliach Beitin. And Beitin who appoints someone to be the executor of the Malkot. Although the Rambam does suggest over here that it was really a sheriff that was going to bring this litigant to the court, or he's being demanded by the court to show up, and is in refusal to come, he either hits him or there's an altercation of some sort that causes the death of this individual when the sheriff's trying to bring him to court. So in all of these cases, there's a mitzvah, because you are teaching, in all different cases here, it's teaching father to son, teaching Rebbe to Talmid, and teaching Beit Din, telling the person that they did something wrong. So in all those instances, that hitting is a mitzvah, and that won't lead to galut because of what Abba Shaul suggests over here. It's only when it's a reshut that you can get galut. The reshut Rabim, he throws a stone into the public thoroughfare, mezidu. He is a posheya, that's intentional. You know the probabilities when you throw a stone into the reshut Rabim, in all likelihood you're going to hit someone, and in all likelihood you're going to do a lot of damage. You can't make a claim here that I threw into reshut Rabim and I didn't really think it was going to do any damage, or it wasn't really intentional. I didn't intend to kill this person. Anybody who throws a rock or a stone into Reshut Rabim has to know it's going to cause significant damage and even maybe kill someone. So Amar Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak b'soteret kotlo. It's a case where he's not throwing the stone into Reshut Rabim. He's demolishing his wall. And then the wall collapses into the Reshut Rabim and kills someone there. It says, he should have been more careful. You can't say there that, oh, it was unintentional. He should have taken more precaution, period. It's not unintentional. You know that the wall can collapse when you're demolishing it. You have to take the right precaution so it doesn't hurt the people in the Reshut Rabim. Now, Besoter Kotlo Belaila. He's demolishing the wall at night. Belaila, Nami Baila Liune. What right does he have to just knock his wall into the Reshut Rabim at night without taking any precaution, without cordoning off that area so people know not to go there? Otherwise, he can expect that there are people there at night as well. You can't just make an assumption that you hit the wall and hope nobody's there. That's already considered to be more than just unintentional. There we consider it to be more liable because you should have taken more precaution. So Gemara says, Suter et kodo la'ashpa. It's a case where he is demolishing the wall into a garbage dump. Hayashpa echidami. What exactly is the story with this garbage dump? Ish chicha barabim. If it's a place frequented by the public at large, whether that's a place where they all dump their garbage, or whether it was an outhouse, a place where people relieve themselves, then posheyahu. You're no different than the Reshut Rabim because you could have expected people to be there, and if all of a sudden you are demolishing the wall and it's going to fall into there, you're throwing, tossing the stones into there, that's a posheya. Ilo shchichei ba'rabim, if people don't frequent there, I mean it's already defunct garbage dump, or defunct outhouse, onusu. That person is not even close to a shogeg. That person is completely accidental. There was no reason he should have expected someone to be there. Some guy, for some reason, decided all of a sudden to go to this defunct garbage dump. That's not something he had to anticipate. That's not something he could have anticipated. So, Amar Rav Papa. So now Rav Papa changes it and says, Lo tzricha el ashpa suya lipanot ba balayla. It's a dump where people either bring their garbage during the night and not during the day, or more likely the word lipanot here means that they relieve themselves there at night and don't relieve themselves there during the day. There's enough cover at dark for them to go there and have privacy. During the day, there's not enough privacy, so they don't go there during the day. So it's only an active outhouse bathroom at night. It is not an active outhouse or bathroom during the day. So then, v'ika de mikri v'yotiv. There are some people that on occasion come during the day, whether they have an emergency situation, whether there's nobody around they think, and they're going to use this ashpa, or this place, during the day. So pasheh lohavi, dayna suy lifanopo bayom. People don't generally use it to relieve themselves during the day, so it can't be considered a posheya. On the other hand, ones nami lohavi, can't be considered completely accidental, ta'ika de mikri v'yotiv. There are circumstances or situations, rarer, but they do happen, that people come and relieve themselves there, and therefore he should have taken a little more precaution. You can claim that he was unintentional because he really didn't expect somebody there. It's not completely accidental because nobody comes there, but he is somewhat responsible because sometimes people come there and he should have taken the precaution to watch against that. And as the Bali Tosafot point out over here, that here we're not talking about Soter Kotlo anymore, breaking down the wall, demolishing the wall. We're speaking about he could be tossing the stones in there. So Tosafot says now we're dealing with during the day. when he throws it into the ashpa, and not when he demolishes it. So the Baal Tosafot say now we drop the previous assumptions, and the case is not of demolishing a wall, but even throwing the stones in, and it's happening during the day, and not during the night. So now the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Elazar ben Yaakov in the Mishnah tells us that if he changes his placement so that he walks into the trajectory of the item, then you're not chayav galut. Tana Rabbanan, how does he know that? From the same pasuk that we've been reading all along, which is, V'sheyavod reo b'yar lachto v'etzim nitcha yadu b'gazin l'chot eitz, nashala barzel meitz, u'matza et re'ehu v'meit. It finds his friend and kills him. Hu yanus el'achat erim e'el avachai. He has to go to the ir miklat. So he's learning from the word umatza, which is that the object, whatever you think the object is, whether it's the head of the axe, whether you think it's the splinter that flew off, matza, found the other party. Prat, lemamtziyat atzmo. Coming to exclude a case where he makes himself available. It has to find him, not he finds it. So he walks into the trajectory of the head of the axe. He walks into the trajectory of the splintering wood, then he was mamtziyat atzmo. He put himself into the flight or the direction, and therefore there's no galut. Galut comes where he's stationary or he's in place and the item reaches him, and that's what it means umatza. Mikan amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov imishiatzta even miyado utzi halet usho. If the trajectory of the item is already determined, then the other person walks into it bikibla, and therefore he gets the blow patur. You don't get galut in that case. Either you can claim it's a gzeirat hakatuv, which is that it's matza v'lo mamtzi, or you can claim that that is more accidental in nature, which is that if the person is stationary, what you do then hits them, you should have been more cautious. You should have taken better precaution over here. And your lack of caution is what caused the death over here. But if it's your lack of caution plus the other individual is moving so that he causes a problem in the fact that he's moving into your sphere of where you're working, in that instance, maybe you're less liable or less responsible because he also contributed to the problem over here by moving while you were doing your work or moving into the area of your work. And so therefore you might be patur because it's closer to ones than it is to being a case of shogeg. Lememra, the matzah meikara mashma. You're telling us that the word matzah in the Torah means something that is already set in motion, something that's already happened, not something that could happen in the future. Vermini, is that really true? Umatzah prat lematzui. When it says umatzah kedei gu'ulato, if an individual sells a field and then wants to redeem the field because he came into some wealth or some money, it says umatzah kedei gu'ulato. These newfound assets allow him now to redeem the field, but it uses the term umatzah kedei gu'ulato prat lematzui. That comes to exclude something that was already found. That precludes you from selling something that's far away and redeeming something closer. Or to sell something that has lower quality to redeem something of a higher quality. What the Gemara is saying here with regards to this din in the Torah gives you a right to redeem fields or property that you sold because people's identity was so tied up in their fields and in their property, especially when we have a yovel, it always goes back to the original owners, and there's a family inheritance of property. That type of thing makes it that a person's identity is so tied up with their property. We see that by the case of Achav and Navot, where Navot doesn't want to sell his kerem. He doesn't want to sell it to Achav, because he says, this is the fields of my fathers and my forefathers. This is something that belongs to our family forever. I don't want to sell it. And that's this idea that we want to give him the opportunity to buy back the property. But we have to look at it in a broader perspective. Did he have the ability to not sell it up front and he still made the choice to sell it? If he did that, we're not going to give him the opportunity now to redeem it with assets or things that were available to him to do at that time. On the other hand, if he has something new or changes in his life, we will allow him to redeem the field. And that's what the Gemara says here. If he had a field further away that he did not sell, and then he sold the field closer by, then at the moment he sold that field, he could have made a different decision. He could just sold the other field and kept this field. If that's the case, we're not going to allow him after the fact to go sell the field that he had the opportunity to do at that time, and then redeem this field. Because that was an opportunity that was available to him, and he sold it despite that. Or, if he had a lower quality field, and now he wants to redeem this one because it's a better quality field. Again, if the lower quality field was available to him to sell at that time, then he can't make a claim, I got something back, I now have the money to redeem it. No, he had the money then. He made a choice to sell it despite that. So the only way we're going to let you redeem it is something changes in your status or in your assets. Then we'll let you do it. And the term it uses is umatza kidei geulato. He finds that new found wealth or asset that allows him to redeem it. There you're reading the word umatza not to mean that you found in the past or was already found. You're looking at that, it is something that he finds now, prata matsui. That it's just the opposite. It's coming to exclude the case where it was already available beforehand. So therefore, the Gemara says, so what they're doing is challenging this concept that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov sources from the word of matzah, and now we're saying the word matzah means already there, already found, and here we find an opposite usage of the word. The Gemara answers, Amarovo, hacha minyane dekra, bata minyane dekra. You have to look in context. The word's definition is defined by the context in which it's found. Hata minyane dekra, over there, it's got to do with the context. Umatza dumia dvesiga yado. The pasuk says that vesiga yado, he found his geula, vesiga yado, and now he has the capacity to pay back or buy back the land. So what is vesiga yado? Masiga yado mehashto. He has the capacity to buy it now with something that's current, that he now has the ability to buy it. Af matzah, nami miyashka. So too, the matzah that's found there is something that happens now, that he now just came into the assets and not something that he had before. Hocha minyone dekra, over here in our case, by galut, it's also part of the pasuk. Matzah dumya diyar. Mayar midei deita miyikara. Just like the forest pre-existed all of this, it was already there. So too, afu matzah nami midei deita miyikara. So too, the word matzah means something that was already there or in motion already, the trajectory was happening, and not that the other individual came into the trajectory of the item. So he says in matzah can mean both things. In one case it is already found, and the other one means that he finds, but the difference has to do with the context. In the context, he finds makes more sense with the redemption of the field. In the case of a forest, it makes more sense to matzah is something that's already determined before the person is killed. Which is that the forest is there. He's already in a position where the item's going to reach him and kill him at that point when the item goes into motion. But if he changes his location, then that's not the case and he's not already found where the death is going to happen. Azorei kedaven, someone who throws a stone. And we said there that it has to be into a place where both parties have the right to be. And then also we learned out from there that it has to be just like chatavat etzim is rishut. So to only things that are reshut would you go into galut for. How do you know that chopping wood is something that is not engaged in a mitzvah, but it is an optional item? How do you know he's not chopping wood for a mitzvah? He's chopping wood to build a sukkah. He's chopping wood to put on the mizbeach. And despite the fact the Torah says, go to galut. So even when you're doing a mitzvah, it seems that the Torah would say that you go into galut. How do you know it's speaking about an optional or something that's not a mitzvah when he's chopping the wood? Amalei, Rava responds to him, Kevin the matzah chatuf lav mitzvah, hashtanami lav mitzvah. The answer is, if you found pre-chopped wood, you would not have a mitzvah to specifically go out and chop the wood again. There's no mitzvah to chop wood for a sukkah. There's no mitzvah to chop wood for the mizbeach. There's a mitzvah to build a sukkah, and there's a mitzvah to put wood on the mizbeach. There are different ways to facilitate that. You can facilitate that by simply having the wood available, and now building the sukkah and putting it on the baracha, or you can go out and chop wood specifically for that purpose. But what you see here is that chopping the wood itself is not the mitzvah, because you don't have to chop wood in order to do this. You can go into sukkah every year, and not chop any wood. So now, what is the mitzvah? So this is an interesting thing over here. The Gemara seems to imply that the asiyat sukkah is a mitzvah, as well as putting the wood on the marocha is the mitzvah. It's not just the burning of the wood on the marocha, it's the providing of the wood to the mizbeach, and also the building of the sukkah. That's interesting because, in general, we see the mitzvah of sukkah as being sitting in the sukkah as the mitzvah, not the building of the sukkah. The truth is that that is not so clear, that the Tosefta as well as the Yushami seem to indicate that there's a bracha that is made on building of the sukkah. And that not only is sitting in the sukkah a mitzvah, but the building of a sukkah is a mitzvah. And that has halachic ramifications for us, which is the bracha of Shechianu. In general, when you do a mitzvah that comes around every once in a while, if you engage in that mitzvah, you make a bracha of Shechianu. The truth is that you have a right to make a bracha of Shechianu on asiyat sukkah, on the making of the sukkah, because you're doing something that is preparing for the mitzvah, or may even be classified as a mitzvah. We don't do that. We make a Shechianu when we sit in the sukkah for the first time. But when we do it the first time, we actually flip the Shechianu around, and we place the Shechianu not only on the Kiddush and the Zman, meaning that you would make Shechianu on Yom Tov irrespective of whether you sat on the sukkah. Shechianu also goes on the Yeshivat HaSukkah and the building of the sukkah. But if someone made Shechianu on the building of the sukkah, they would still make a Shechianu when they made Kiddush because it's Yom Tov and you make Shechianu on Yom Tov, but then they would not have necessarily associated with the Yeshivat HaSukkah because you already made the Shechianu on the building of the sukkah. But the fact that you can even make a Shechianu on the building of the sukkah indicates that there's some sort of mitzvah in building of the sukkah. Again, that's strange because generally that's classified as what's called a heksher mitzvah. That's something that facilitates your ability to do the mitzvah. So here you have two stages. One stage is chopping the wood. The next is building the sukkah. And the last stage is sitting in the sukkah. So normally how we would view this is that the sitting in the sukkah is the mitzvah. The building the sukkah is the heksher mitzvah. That's facilitating it. The chopping the wood is heksher the heksher. It's the facilitating of the mitzvah of sukkah. So that's how we would view it normally. And you would say that the first stage is not required. The second stage is not required. It's only the last stage, which is sitting in the sukkah, that's required. There's no mandatory necessity to chop the wood. There's no necessity to build the sukkah. There's only a necessity to sit in the sukkah. Yet here the Gemara seems to indicate that a siyata sukkah is a mitzvah and not just simply a heksher mitzvah. So here you have an interesting concept where the Gemara seems to indicate that a heksher mitzvah is considered to be a mitzvah, the siyata sukkah is considered to be a mitzvah. We have other mitzvot like that, like tzitzit. Tzitzit also has the same issue, which is, you wear tzitzit, we make a bracha, litatef batzitzit. But the Gemara brings, entertains the possibility, again it's in the Tosefta, Yerushalmi as well, this idea that you make a bracha on asiyat ha-tzitzit, making of tzitzit. So again there, it's a heksher mitzvah, yet the Gemara seems to classify it as being a part of the mitzvah, a part and parcel of the mitzvah. By other mitzvah we don't say that, but by sukkah and tzitzit we do. What's different about sukkah and tzitzit that we don't find by other mitzvot where the asiyah is part and parcel of the mitzvah? It's not considered or classified as an extra mitzvah. It's almost an adjunct to the mitzvah itself. So over here you have these two cases where it seems strange that the extra mitzvah becomes an adjunct to the mitzvah itself. So the Netziv actually has a nice piece on this where he discusses this issue and he says that you have to look at the mitzvot themselves. The mitzvah of sukkah and the mitzvah of tzitzit, unlike other mitzvot, have the word asiyah built into the mitzvah. Gdilim ta'aseh lecha. V'asu lehem tzitzit. The asiyah tzitzit, or the way that the mitzvah is defined, is in the asiyah itself. And so the asiyah becomes what's called a part and parcel of the mitzvah, or what he calls a heksher mitzvah kotuv b'torah. It's a heksher mitzvah where the Torah says it. Torah doesn't just tell you the mitzvah, it even tells you the heksher mitzvah. So he calls it an extra mitzvah kotuv b'torah, and therefore it takes on an added status where it becomes almost a part and parcel of the mitzvah, and it's not just classified as an extra mitzvah. And the same thing by Chag HaSukkot HaSelecha, there's also the asiyah that is associated with sukkah. And it's important that the mitzvot of tzitzit and the mitzvah of sukkah have an asiyah associated with them, which is something about the building of the sukkah has significance. Again, in order to do the mitzvah, you don't have to build the sukkah. But you see from this that the Torah does put importance on the building of the sukkah, and therefore, even though there are arguments about the kashrut, the pergolas, and all the things that are built that are there all year round, the fact that the Torah demands an asiyah from you means that there's something to do with the asiyah that the Torah considers important. Again, not necessary, but the fact that it is important to engage in the building of the sukkah is something that is special, something that we put significance on, and educationally might be very important for children as well, which is that if one never builds a sukkah, you always end up somewhere where the sukkah is built, then the children never learn about the mitzvah, the chavivas mitzvah, building the sukkah. But there, especially where the Torah specifically states that you have to do the asiyah, and similarly with tzitzit, where again, we normally buy tzitzit and they just have the strings on them, there might be something educationally to actually doing it one time, or doing it together with the kids, and making tzitzit, because the making the tzitzit is part and parcel of the mitzvah, and therefore one maybe should make that extra effort to make tzitzit once or twice, just to demonstrate the chavivut mitzvah and the asiyah that is part and parcel of the mitzvah. This Gemara seems to reinforce this idea that asiyat sukkah is also a part of the mitzvah. Eitve Ravina l'Rabbah. So now Ravina challenges Rava's answer that here it's not a mitzvah to chop the wood in order to do the mitzvah. Therefore, that's not considered to be a part of the mitzvah. Yatsa av amaked b'no v'arava rodeh talmido ushliach beitin. All of these people are excluded because they're doing a mitzvah. Lema kevin de'ilu gamir lav mitzvah hashanami lav mitzvah. Why don't you say, if he learns, there is no mitzvah? If the child does the right thing, there's no mitzvah to hit the child. If the Talmid does the right thing and is learning, the Rebbe doesn't have to hit the child. So in those cases, the mitzvah only comes when you don't have it, when it's not available to you, or the child is not complying with what they're supposed to do. So based on your concept that if there's an opportunity to do without this, then it's not called a mitzvah. Over here, there's a possibility the child doesn't need to be hit. They comply. Or the Talmid doesn't need to hit. They're doing the right thing. So if that's the case, why should it be deemed a mitzvah? Now, a Tosafot points out already that Shliach Beit Din is a little bit problematic over here, because by Shliach Beit Din, you have to say that he has to give Malkot. So Tosafot over here gives two parts to the answer. The first part of the answer is, Yishlomar mikomokom ika mitzvah mitchila. In the first place, when the Shliach Beit Din is sent by Beit Din to give the Malkot, then he is doing a mitzvah immediately. It's considered to be a mitzvah. And even though after he gives the Malkot, there's no mitzvah to give Malkot anymore, nevertheless, he was sent in that capacity. Now, what about the fact that if the guy didn't do the sin, he wouldn't need Malkot, and therefore maybe it shouldn't be considered a mitzvah? He says, that's not a problem, because then the person wouldn't be classified as a Shliach Beit Din. The only time you become a Shliach Beit Din is if there's a reason to give Malkot to this individual. So that's why there's a mitzvah to do it. If the person never sinned, there would never be a Shliach Beit Din that needs to give him Malkot. The instruction to the Shliach Beit Din to go and give the Malkot would never happen if the person didn't sin. So you can't claim, well, if he didn't sin, you wouldn't need him. He wouldn't be a Shliach Beit Din then. And he's not even in that purview. So Tosafot knocks out Shliach Beit Din for that reason, and really focused on the other two, which is Avet Beno and Aravet Talmido. Lema kevin de'ilu gamir lav mitzvah ashnami lav mitzvah hatam afagal de gamir mitzvah. Even if he does the right thing, there's a mitzvah to hit him. So here the Gemara says, not only is there a mitzvah to hit him to put him on the right track, there's a mitzvah to hit him just so that he knows that he should be on the right track and that he should know who's in charge. Dichtiv yaser bincha v'nichecha. You should, the word yaser over here means to oppress, but really means to hit or punish the child, v'nichecha, and he will give you peace. V'tein madanim l'nafshecha, and he'll give pleasure to your soul. I mean, a child that is brought up in a strict environment and is given directives and maybe even hit, so they know that the directives are important, and give him direction, that child turns out okay. Child that's never hit, or a child that is never guided in this way, doesn't necessarily end up in the right place, just because he doesn't know the significance or the severity of what he's about to engage in. And therefore, sometimes there's a value in hitting, even if it's instructive in nature, not because he did something wrong, but just because of the instructive side of the hitting. So obviously here it's a different time period and a different view of hitting of children, but here the Gemara looks very positively on this, both for a father to a child and a teacher to a student. And obviously today's world looks at these things differently. The world today doesn't accept this as a valid means of direction for children. And likely that change came about because of the fact that people don't control it and don't use it in a controlled manner. Using the hitting and the instructive hitting is only good when it's done in a manner that's controlled and a manner that's instructive. The problem becomes that people lose control and get angry, and then they use it in ways that are abusive, or there are people who are abusive in general. And so therefore, hitting becomes a very dangerous vehicle for instruction when it's not used properly. Hadar Amar Rava, lav milti. Rava then backed away from his answer and said, to Amre, Vasheya Voad Rehu Bayar. It says that he came into the forest to eat by Ayo, Vile Bo by Ayo. Because over there he has a choice whether he wants to go in or he doesn't want to go in. Vizagadatcha mitzvah, Mizagid Loyal. If it was a mitzvah, how could it be that it was an option to go into the forest? So he's saying the word Basher, Basher indicates that he happened to go into the forest. It's not that he was instructed to go in the forest, he had to go into the forest, he made a choice to go into the forest. So therefore, given that he had the choice to go into the forest, that's what makes it into a reshut and not a mitzvah. So forget the answer I gave before, that you don't have to chop wood to do the mitzvah, you don't need that answer. The answer is that it says optional to go in. Optional to go in means there's no mitzvah over here. Somebody rather bravo. The Rova Koecha Dikhtiv Asher Diiboyu. Anytime the Torah uses the Asher, it's optional. Elamiato. The Pasuk says, Ish Asher Yitma Velo Yitchata. By Parah Aduma and Parshat Chukat, says an individual becomes Tamei and does not get Tahor through the sprinkling of the waters of the Parah Aduma, then he remains Tamei. If he's Tamei and then enters into the Mikdash, he's going to be Chayav Karet for doing such. Ibai mitma, ibai loi mitma. You're going to stress over here, isha sher yitma. That a person who becomes tamei, that's if he could have become tamei, or he didn't become tamei. Didn't have to become tamei, he chose to become tamei. So in most cases, the person can become tamei, it's a choice whether they enter into the cemetery. It's a choice whether they enter into a house where there's a mate there. So that's the case where he's chayab karet. Mate mitzvah, dolo sagi dolo mitame. You're going to suggest now, a mate mitzvah which is enjoined to deal with the mate mitzvah, which is the mate mitzvah itself demands that he engage in tumah. And it overrides things like being a kohen, things like being tahor for the regel. Mate mitzvah is so important that we tell you must become tameh to deal with a mate mitzvah. So in there where it's an imperative to become tameh, you're going to suggest then, hachanami de potor? That if now he goes into the mikdash when he's tameh after becoming tameh mate mitzvah, no problem. Oh, you did it for a mitzvah? Come on in. That's what you're going to suggest here, that the word asher means optional? Rabbeinu Chananel says that maybe we would suggest over here, hachanami de potur michitui utvila, that actually you'd be potur here from having to be tahir yourself and you could remain tamei, not like what Rashi says, which is that if you enter the mikdash in that state, that you would not be chayav. So when it says, shani otam damakra, the pasuk over there says, tamei iye mikom makom. Says you are tamei no matter what. There isn't any idea here that the tumah is connected to whether it was in imperative or whether it was by choice. Torah says you're tamei, period. And once you're tamei, you can't enter into the mikdash. It says, how will you that tamei, yeah, we need for another drasha. The diktanya tamei, yeah, the rabot tvuyom, tumato, bo, the rabot mechusar, kipurim. So it says, tamei, yeah, o tumato, bo. From there, the Gemara learns, a person who is tamei may not enter the mikdash. Not only someone who's tamei, tumata mate, or tumat zav, or any other full-fledged tumah, but even people who have a lower level of tumah. A person, as they become tahor, go through stages where they become more and more tahor. Doesn't have instantaneously where the person becomes tahor. Every tahara requires going to the mikveh, and then after going to the mikveh requires harev shemesh, the sun setting on that day. Even the lightest forms of tumah, but especially 7-day tumah requires one go to the mikveh, and then a harev shemesh, the sun setting. So, a person, after they go to the mikveh, before the sun sets, is called a tvul yom. So he's removed some tumah from him. A tvul yom can eat maser, he can do certain things, but he still makes trumah, tmeyah, and tukodashim tamei. But after Herev Shemesh, once the sun sets, then he's mutar bitrumah, that we already know from the first Mishnah in Brachot. When is the time for Kriyat Shema? Mishash HaKohanim Nichasim Nechol B'Trumatan. The time that the Kohanim can go and eat Truma. Why? Because the sun set. They went to the mikveh. The sun set. They're Tahorim now. They can eat Truma. But there are certain Tumot that are higher levels of Tuma that not only require you to go to the mikveh and sunset after a 7-day period, they also require you to bring a Korban in order to be Tahor. That is what's called a Mechusar Kippurim. Someone who goes to the mikveh as the sun set, but has yet to bring his korban, they're considered mechusar kippurim. Once they bring their korban, they'll be totally tahor. After they go to the mikveh and the sun sets, they're mutarim b'tshuma, they're still asur b'kodoshim, and asur to enter the mikdash. After they bring their korban, then they're mutar even b'kodoshim, and to go into the mikdash. So you have stages as the tumah is removed from the individual. How do you know that at all those stages you're precluded from entering into the Mikdash? That's what the drasha is. Tameiyeh, o tumato bo, tells you not only when you are a tamei mate, but even after you go to the mikveh, you still can't go into the Mikdash. How do I know that after you went to the mikveh and the sun set, that if you required to bring a korban, you're still not allowed to go into the Mikdash? That's o tumato bo, mechuser kippurim. All those stages of tumah preclude you from entering into the Mikdash. So that tameiyeh is not available for your drasha. So amalei, ana, mi'od, tumato bo, kamina. I learned it from that, which is another extraneous pasuk, where from the additional word od, which comes to tell you that after you become tamei, whether you came tamei at berishut, or you became tamei as a mitzvah, doesn't really matter. You are considered to be tamei for entering the Mikdash. So that extraneous pasuk teaches us, despite the fact that there's a difference between optional and mitzvah, in the end, the outcome is the same, or the rules are the same. You can't enter into the Mikdash. So that's the end of that cycle. But Ika Dematni Lalaha. Some people had this whole conversation, both between the Rabbonon that spoke to Rava, Rava's answer, and then Ravina's question of Rava about a totally different case, which is this. Becharishu Bekatsir Tishbot. The pasuk says that you have to have a respite, take a rest from plowing and harvesting. The context in which this is written in Shmot Lamed Dalet, which is Parshat Kitisa, makes it look like it's speaking about Shabbat. Charish and Katzir Tishbot on Shabbat. There is a machlok between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Yishmael, part of which we will see now, as to whether the context in which it's written, does it mean Shabbat or does it mean Shvi'it? Rabbi Kiva believes it's referring to the Shvi'it. Rabbi Yishmael believes that it's referring to Shabbat. Rabbi Yishmael seems to be the simple reading of the Psukim, because the context there in Kitisa is Shabbat. But if you look much more carefully and you bring up the parallels between Parshat Mishpatim and Parshat Kitisa, you'll see if you align the psukim, almost identical psukim, you'll see that in Parshat Mishpatim, the Torah calls it Shvi'it, in the place that it says V'charish HaKatzir would match up with it in Parshat Kitisa. Rabbi Akiva doesn't seem so far-fetched anymore if you line up the psukim between Mishpatim and Kitisa, that V'charish HaKatzir is speaking about Shvi'it. But that's their machloket. What is it speaking about? And Rabbi Akiva Omer, Einu Tzarech Lamar Charish Shel Shvi'it, you don't have to die about plowing on Shvi'it, v'katsir shel Shvi'it, or harvesting on Shvi'it, shvei kvar ne'amar, because the pasuk already says, zadchalo tizra, don't plant your field, v'chamachalo tizmar, and your vineyards do not harvest, do not pick them. So there's already a restriction on Shvi'it from planting, it's also restricted from harvesting. So now you don't need another Easter to tell you, v'charish u'katsir tishbot, ela. What does it come to teach you? Afil charish shel erev Shvi'it, shenichnas Shvi'it, plowing on Erev Shvi'it, where the plowing is not for the sixth year, but rather is beneficial for the seventh year, that is restricted. The Mishnayot in Shvi'it discuss how early that is. How much earlier is it considered to be that the work you're doing is already preparatory for Shvi'it, not for Shishit anymore? Does it go back to Pesach? Does it go back to Shavuot? It's only 30 days before. Different dates for different situations. But what Rabbi Akiva says is that there is a restriction from engaging in these activities prior to Shvi'it, if they're going to be for the benefit of Shvi'it. And harvesting the same thing. When you harvest after Shvi'it, the produce is still considered to be produce of Shvi'it, as long as it matured up to a third in the Shvi'it itself. And so even though you're harvesting it on Motzei Shvi'it, it still has a classification of produce of Shvi'it. So that's Rabbi Akiva's view as to what the Charish B'Katzir is about. The Charish itself is also a little bit of problematic here, because the pasuk that Rabbi Akiva quotes is, you're asur lizroa, to plant, and you're asur to katsir, to harvest. Nowhere in the pasuk does it say it's asur to plow. Rabbi Akiva says, oh, it must be plowing on every Shvi'it, because plowing on Shvi'it is already mentioned. Torah never mentions plowing on Shvi'it. That's what the Baalei Tosafot ask over here. About charisha loktiv klal hotam. Where do you ever see charish on Shvi'it itself being asur? Come on out of the psukim for all other things that involve working the land. The only things that are written in the Torah are midoraita sur on Shvi'it. Midorabanan, there are other things that are sur, but midoraita, the only things that surot are avodot that are mentioned in the Torah. And one of the avodot that he excludes over there is plowing. Someone who plows on Shvi'it does not get Malkot. Yesh lomar, kevin desavar katsir ati letosefet, charish nami ati letosefet. Well, since the pasuk is already telling that katsir is about beyond shvi'it, then you must think that charish is also beyond shvi'it. But what are the implications of that? Is it possible that charish would be asur on erev shvi'it, but not asur on shvi'it? Mido raito? How could that be? From this, you end up with actually a machloket arishonim, as to whether charish is asur mido raita on shvi'it, or only mido rabbanan. Because Rabbi Akiva says the charish on erev shvi'it is asur, implying that mido raita must be the charish is asur on shvi'it. Here Tosfot says maybe not, maybe it's just because it's connected to katsir. But still in the end you end up with something ludicrous, which is erev shvi'it charish is problematic, on shvi'it charish is just a din derabanan, it's not a din deoraita. Erev shvi'it is a din deoraita. It's very strange. So there are Rishonim who believe that Harish is definitely Asur Midoraita. Other Rishonim who believe it is only Asur Midorabanan. And then they might also think that the Harish of Rabbi Akiva is also not a Dindoraita, but rather just a Dindorabonon that's an extension of Shvi'it. I mean, rabbinically, it's the Katsir that matters, not the Harish. The Harish is on Shvi'it, but the Katsir is after Shvi'it. But then if you think the Harish is on Shvi'it, then maybe you have a source for the fact that Harish on Shvi'it is Asur Midoraita. So depending how you read Rabbi Akiva over here, will have implications as to whether you believe Charish is one of the avodot that's asur midoraita on Shvi'it. And obviously it has great implications for us, where we are only keeping Shvi'it midorabanan. The heterim that we use, we only use with the avodot derabanan. We don't use them by avodot doraita. So if Charish is classified as doraita, we're not going to allow you to do it on Shvi'it. Whereas it's only a din derabanan, then for Hukume Ilana, we would allow you to do it on Shvi'it. So it has major implications as to whether it is or isn't Midoraita. That's Rabbi Akiva's position. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Macharish Rishut, Avkatzir Rishut. Rabbi Shmuel, unspoken over here, he believes it's talking about Shabbat and not Shvi'it. He says, what does that mean? What's it teaching you? Macharish Rishut, just like plowing on Shabbat, is optional. Of Katsir Rishut, so too, harvesting on Shabbat is optional. That's where it is restricted. Yotza Katsir Omer Shu Mitzvah. That excludes the harvesting of the Omer, which is a mitzvah, which would be permitted on Shabbat and would be Doche Shabbat. Amalei Rabbanan L'Rova Mimai Decharisha D'Rishut. How do you know the plowing on the Shabbat is a plowing of Rishut? Dimu Charishata Omer De Mitzvah. Who says it may not be the plowing for the Omer, which is a mitzvah? V'achilu Alchi Amar Rachmana Tishbot. Despite the fact you're doing for a mitzvah, the Torah says, you may not. You have to desist from doing such. If he around something already plowed, he doesn't have to plow. Lav mitzvah. That's the same answer that Rava gave with regards to what we saw before. If something is usable in its current state, there's no mitzvah to do it. That means there's no mitzvah to do it, because you don't have to do it. You don't have to do it to facilitate, but if it's already there, you don't have to actively do it to do it for the mitzvah. Eitvei Ravina the Rova, Yotza Ava Maket Beno, Rabbi Rodet, Talmidov Shleach Beitin. He asked the question for our Mishnah again, Ravina the Rova. Vamai, Lema Kevin to Ugomi or Lav Mitzvah. Just if he did the right thing, he wouldn't have to hit him. So therefore, also Hashtanami Lav Mitzvah. So to now when he hits him, it's not a mitzvah, because could be a possibility that it wouldn't be a mitzvah if he did the right thing. It's only because he's doing the wrong thing that it's a mitzvah. So Atam Afagav de Gomir Nami Mitzvah Kabi, like we said before, even though he does the right thing, there's still a mitzvah. Dichtiv Yaser bin Chamin Ichecha Bitei Ma'adanim Linaf Shecha. Hadar Marav Alav Milti. Nah, that's not the right answer. Damrei Tzira Dumi de Charisha. Macharitza Matza Charush Enu Choresh. Just like by Charisha, if he finds it already plowed, he doesn't need to plow. Af Katsir Nami, so too Katsir Nami. Visa Gadatcha Mitzvah. If you're telling me there's a mitzvah to do it, matzah katzur, eino kotzer. That if you found something that is already harvested, eino katzur, mitzvah liktzor lavi. That's just not true. That you is a mitzvah to do the ktzirat omer. So he says there's a fundamental difference between charisha and ktzira. There's never a manifestation of charisha as a mitzvah, because charisha, if it's found charush, already planted, there's no obligation to do that. On the other hand, the ktzirat omer, even if you found it katsur, there's a mitzvah liktzor, to cut specifically for the omer. So given that, there's a big difference between charisha and ktzira. Charisha is a rishut, ktzira is a mitzvah. And so that's the difference over here. The Torah is saying to you that the things that are restricted are charisha and ktzira that are similar in nature, which is charisha that is not required, like ktzira that's not required. But a ketubah that is required, that would be precluded from this pasuk over here, because we don't find charisha that is required. And so ketubah, when it is juxtaposed to charisha, is only a case where it's something that is not required. Right, next Mishnah. Ha'av goleh ayideh ben, ve'aben goleh ayideh av. A father can be put into galut from a son, and a son can be put into galut because of the father. Ha'kol goleh ayideh Yisrael. Anybody can be put into galut from the death of Israel. Israel golim ayudeim. And similarly, Israel would be goleh from interacting with those, killing those people. Chutz miger toshav, with the exception of ger toshav. We'll see why in the Gemara tomorrow's daf. The ger toshav ain't a goleh, el yadei ger toshav. The ger toshav will only be put into galut for killing another ger toshav. Ha'av goleh ayideh ben. The father can end up in galut because of the child. Ba'amart yatsa av ha'maket beno. Didn't you say before that a father is hitting his child is excluded from galut? So now you're saying all of a sudden a father can go to galut? I said the gomir. It's a case where the child was doing the right thing and the father was hitting him anyway. Ba'amart avagam the gomir mitzvah kavi. Didn't you tell us that even if he did do the right thing, there's still a mitzvah to hit him? So then how can you claim that he's doing it? Shulya denagre. It's a case where it's an apprentice to the carpenter. It's not a father and son in the sense of biological father and son. It's a father and son in the sense of apprenticeship, where he's learning carpentry from the carpenter. Where it says, Shulya denagre, chiyuta hi delamde. Wait a minute, it's a mitzvah to teach your child a profession so that he can support himself. That we learn in the Gemara in Kiddushin, Mishnah in Kiddushin, which is, Kshem Shaviv Chayav Lasio Isha. Just like a father is obligated to marry his son off and take for him a wife, so too, he has to, kachayav lamdo umanut. He also is chayav to teach him a trade or a profession, because it says, rei chayim imisha shahafta. So it says, rei chayim, life, imisha shahafta, with a wife that you love. So the word chayim, livelihood, or life, is connected to isha. Just like the father has an obligation to procure a wife for his son, he also has an obligation to provide him chiyuto, his ability to sustain himself, a profession for himself. So now, if you're telling me that the person is set up as an apprentice to learn from the carpenter, then that is also a mitzvah kavod. The carpenter who's training him is also doing a mitzvah, so then when he hits the apprentice, that is not out of line, that's also engaging in a mitzvah. The gamir umunata achrite. It's his second profession. He already has a way to support himself, and now he's learning something new. He wants to upgrade his credentials. He wants to learn something new. Over there, there's no more a mitzvah because he already has the ability to support himself. So at that point, the mitzvah is gone. And if the father hits the child and kills the child in that context, there's no justification for it because he's not learning. So in the case where the father is either teaching the child, whether that's the way of life, the way to behave, Torah, or he's teaching him a profession, all those cases, there's a mitzvah being done. And therefore the hitting is in the context of a mitzvah, a directive to do the mitzvah correctly. On the other hand, when it's not in that context, where he's hitting him after he already has a job, after he already is on the right path, that already might be more questionable, and that's where the av can be put into galut because of the child. But the Ri does ask, that's only true that it's a mitzvah to hit the child when it's in the context of teaching or guiding the child. If he just goes out into the forest and something happens there and it kills the child, there you can't claim it's in the context of a mitzvah. So why don't we give that as the example of a case where the av would go into galut for the child? So the Tosfos in the end answers that the Mishnah doesn't make such a distinction. The Mishnah seems to indicate that it's true in all scenarios or all situations. Even in a case where the father is giving instruction, he still might have to end up in galut. Is that really true? Makeh nefesh, prat the makeh aviv. The pasuk says that when you hit someone. So when you hit someone, it comes to tell you nefesh is a generic nefesh and not makeh of hitting the father. Amar Rav Kana, lo kasha, Rabbi Shimon Rabbonon. The difference between these opinions is Rabbi Shimon Rabbonon. That is because makeh aviv imo, person who hits their parents, injures their parents, is subject to a death penalty. Someone who kills is also subject to a death penalty. The only difference is which death penalty. If a person hits their parents, they're subject to a punishment of chenek. That is the standard mitzvah in the Torah, and that's what we're given for hitting his parents. On the other hand, killing, a rotzeach, is killed by hereg, by saif, by the sword, and that's his punishment. Which of those two is a more severe punishment? That depends, as we saw in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, whether you think like Rabbi Shimon or you think like the Chachamim. The Chachamim believe Chenek is the lowest form of punishment, and Sayif is a higher form of punishment. So now you have an option. This individual engaged in both hitting a parent and then killed the parent. In that case, you have two possible mitot to give him. Makeh Avivimo, Chenek, or Rotzeach gets Sayif. Sayif is more chamor, you're going to give him Sayif. Rabbi Shimon is going to be just the opposite. Rabbi Shimon says you have a competition between Chenek and Sayif. Chenek is the more severe, you're going to give him Chenek. So now, in a case of Mezid, where you have a competition between Makeh Avivimo and Rotzeach, over there you give the more severe punishment. So now when you look in Galut, you have to look at what do you consider to be a Shogeg of. If you're going to give him the punishment of Makeh Avivimo, then he becomes Shigigat Makeh Avivimo, and there's no Galut for that. The other, if you're going to give him the punishment of Rotzeach, then he becomes Shigigat Rotzeach, which there is Galut for. And that's what the Gemara says. The Rabbi Shimon Amar Chenek Chamur Misayif, he thinks that Chenek is more Chamur than Saif. Shigigat Saif Nitna the Kapara. Then a Shogeg of Saif, of murder, has a right to Kapara. Shigigat Chenek no Nitna the Kapara. The other hand, a Shigigat, which is the hitting of the parent, that doesn't have Kapara. That's too severe a punishment. That's a higher form of negligence or lack of being careful, and therefore you don't get Galut. Rabbanan Damre Saif Chamor Mechenek, they say that Hereg is more Chamor, or in essence, Rotzeach is more Chamor than Makeh Avivimo. Hereg Aviv B'Shogeg Shigat Saifu. Shigat Saif Nitna L'Chapara. Because the person then who kills their parents, Chas V'Shalom, when they hit them, they have both problems here. But the one that trumps is Rotzeach, because that's the more severe punishment according to the Chachamim. Therefore, if it's done B'Shogeg, it's a Shogeg of murder. Shogeg of murder, Nitna L'Chapara, you can go into Galut. Rav Amar, Prat Losei Chabura B'Aviv B'Shogeg. Comes to exclude a case where he unintentionally made a chabura on his parent. Since if he hit his parent intentionally, he'd be subject to a death penalty, just like a murderer. Just like a murderer goes to galut, you would think that also should go to galut. Kamash Malan, that we don't say that, and that's why it says makei nefesh prat the makei aviv. Saying that that's not true by Makeh Aviv. What's true by Makeh Nefesh about Galut is not true by Makeh Aviv. And again here, you could say that for one of two reasons. Gzeret HaKatuv. Or you could claim that Makeh Aviv Imo is more severe. Despite the fact that for the Chachamim it's a lower punishment, but the hitting of a parent is in a different realm. It's Kukash Kvodam Lekvod HaMakom. And therefore Galut will not suffice as a kapara in this case. Hakol Golim Ayidei Yisrael. Anybody can end up in Galut because of Israel. Hakol Golim Ayidei Yisrael Letuyei Mai. Who does that come to include? Letuyei Eved V'Kuti. That comes to include an Eved Kanani and a Kuti. If Israel kills them B'Shogeg, then he goes into Galut. So when I says Tanila the Tanu Rabbanan, based on that, our mission backs up a Braita that we have. Eved V'Kuti Gole V'Lokei Ayidei Yisrael. And Eved and a Kuti end up in Galut, or get malkot when they do something to a Yisrael. Yisrael gole velokea yidei kuti ve'eved. And Yisrael will end up in galut, or get malkot for killing an eved or a kuti. By the way, this is one of the big chidushim of the Torah, which is that if you looked at any other codes, including the Hammurabi code, different classes had different punishments. Like they have today in India, in some areas, where if someone kills someone from a lower caste, it's a different punishment. It's deemed different than murdering someone from a higher class or higher caste. So too, in the Hammurabi code and other codes that all existed, it was a differential that if a person killed someone lower down in the echelons of society, they could compensate for it. But then if they killed someone in the higher echelons of society, either they were killed, or most times it meant that the person could kill that same relative. So if this person killed someone's son, he'd have the right to go back and kill the other person's son. So there's problems with that for a number of reasons. One of which is this distinction in classes, that human beings are not of equal nature or equal life. And therefore there's different punishments for them. The Torah dispels that completely, and you see that right here. The Torah says that a person is punished for killing a Yisrael, an Eved, and a Kuti. All of those are in the same category. There's no differentiation that's made there. It's the same din of galut for all of them. Bishlamai Evid Bikuti Gola Yede Yisrael, like the loke, Gola Yede Yisrael, the loke, and he gets makot. Gola, it's the case of Katle. He killed him unintentionally, shogeg, he has to go into galut. The loke, where do you get makot? The lachia, that he cursed a Jew. He curses a Jew, then he's subject to a punishment of malkot, that we learn out from Nasib Amcha Lo Taor, the Lo Tikalel Cheresh, Binyan Av, that comes from a Matzad, from those two together, teaches that you may not curse anybody, and it says Nasib Amcha Lo Taor, or Lo Tikalel Cheresh, so there's a Lotase associated with it, that Lotase will result in him getting malkot. El Yisrael goleh v'lokeh yidei kuti. What's the scenario where Yisrael is goleh and lokeh for a kuti? Bishlamo goleh, case of galut is dekatle. He killed him and he goes to galut like any other person. El lokeh amai. What's the case that he gets makot for? Delatio, if it's a case where he cursed him, v'nasib amcha lo tor. The limud comes out of nasib amcha, and we have a drush on that, but osem ase amcha. That he has to be a person or an individual who acts like Amcha, that he practices Torah and Mitzvot in that proper manner. That's where there's a restriction against cursing. Otherwise, there is no such restriction. So now here, by the Kuti, who clearly doesn't keep the Torah properly, is not Osim Ase Amcha, there'd be no restriction of cursing him. The most see this just as a question on the Kuti, who's not Osim Ase Amcha, because even if they were Gerei Emet, afterwards we found that they were not keeping the Torah, at least the Torah Shebe'al Peh, or they were worshipping idols in the Harei Shomron. But the Ritva suggests that the question is equally applicable to Eved Kanani as well. And even though he has a din like an Isha, nevertheless he's not called Amcha because he's not allowed to join the Kahal, or because generally we find in the Mishnah and Avot and other places that Abadim are Asukim B'Gezel. And so therefore they're not Osei Maase Amcha, and the question is equally applicable to an Eved. It's a case where he came to testify against the Kuti, and then he's found to be an Eid Zomeim. So then in that case, since he was trying to punish this Kuti with Malkot, he'll get Malkot. So Mar says, gavid eved sheed bo uzam. So then, if you're going to say that, the parallel structure in the Braita would indicate that it's also true for the Eved when he does it to the Israel. So now what are you going to say here? By Eved sheed bo uzam. It's a case where the Eved went and testified and then he became an Eid Zomeim. Eved bar eduto? Since when is an Eved a kosher Eid? He can't end up in Beit Din, so that can't be the explanation of what it means that gets Malkot for the Kuti. El Amar of Acha Bar Eid Rav Yika, Acha Maizkinan, Konshiko Aka, Shein Bashem Epruta. He hit him, or he injured him, with something that's not of the value of Shavepruta. The Amar Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yochanan, Hikau Haka Shein Bashem Epruta. He hits the person with a blow, get as a diminishment in value of less than a pruta, loke, he gets makot. We don't create a hekesh between haka and klala, to say that just like by klala, there is a requirement of osei asei amcha, we don't say that requirement applies by haka. It's actually a machloket that we saw in Pehe and with Bet in Sanhedrin, as to whether you do make that correlation to say osei masei amcha applies not only to the case of klala, but also to haka. Obviously, what the Gemara is saying here is that this is according to one who says that there is no correlation between them. And now, the answer is that the Torah tells you that you may not hit another person. That we learn out from the Shliach Beit Din that says, Pen Tosif, Lo Tosif, which is that you're not allowed to add on to the Malkot, because if you do add on to the Malkot, then you'll be held accountable for what you do. From there, we learn there's a restriction to hit other people. So what Rashi points out is that restriction against hitting other people is only true when there's no compensation there. If there is restitution that has to be paid, compensation that has to be made, then that compensation overrides the need for malkot, because we say, person's ain't a loke mishalem, you can't have both punishments. On the other hand, if a person doesn't have to pay, then the law is in place and he would get malkot for it. That's what is being said by the Gemara over here. It's less than a Shavapruta, so he has no requirement to return that amount or return that money. And since he has no requirement to make restitution in that case, he's now subject to the law of Chavala, of injuring a party or hurting someone else, and he'll get Malkot because there's no monetary compensation involved. And so that's how we would explain the case where a Jew who did this to a Kuti would be Chayav Malkot, is a case where he hit him, but the injury that was caused was less than a Shavapruta, and in that case, There's no compensation, and therefore you'll get malkot for violating the restriction of Chabalah, unlike other cases where there would have been compensation, and he wouldn't beget the malkot. That's the case of malkot for the Yisrael when he does that to the Kuti, and we'll stop here by the two dots on the top of Tet Amud Aleph.